Can I live in the awareness of allness? This is the Absolute Philosopher speaking from Campo, California, University of Philosophy, University of Healing, and all sorts of good things like that. And our subject this evening is, can I live in the awareness of allness? Today we were discussing the idea of reincarnation. And we were discussing the idea of previous lives and what you are held in bondage of from those previous lives, that if you made mistakes in your previous life, can you correct those mistakes in this life? And the answer is absolutely, 100% no. There's no way you can correct anything you did in the past, and there's no reason that you should. Because no matter what you did, how good or bad it was, it makes no difference. It's only what you're doing in the present that makes any difference. Now, if in the past you were a naughty person, and in the present you are still a naughty person, well, what's there to correct, you know? If in the past you were a naughty person and today you're a nice person, well, are you held in bondage to what you were in the past? Well, some people say yes. That's karma and reincarnation and all that sort of stuff. I say, if you believe in karma and reincarnation, then you do not believe that all is now. You do not believe that all time is here and now. You do not believe that all space is here and now. And if all time is here and now and all space is here and now, then there's no place for some otherness. There's no place for reincarnation or these other things. I'm not against them in the slightest, you know, but there's no place for them. And if there's no place for them, what are we going to teach? Are we going to teach a dualism that says reincarnation is okay because that's over here on this block, and over here on this block there's no time and no space, you know? It's sort of ludicrous to have these dualistic attitudes, but that's what we do. It's not unusual. It's not unusual. People think that Jesus Christ died for our sins, and so we should be paid up, you know? Anything that we do is already paid for by his death. And, of course, that's not true. He didn't die for our sins. He didn't die, in fact. He stood up for principle. He stood up for principle, which we all should do. And if we stand up for principle, then many people will write stories about us. It's just like in the opening chapter of Illusion by Richard Bach. He has the fish clinging to the bottom of the river. And the fish are clinging to the bottom of the river, holding tight as the river rushes by them. And they want to cling so that they don't get, you know, off into the turbulent waters and banged against the rocks. Until finally one person, one fish, says, "Hey, I don't care if I'm banged against a rock. I'm bored staying right here doing nothing but clinging." And so he let go. And as he was sailing through the air, other clinging fish looked up at him and said, "Look, a Messiah. Look, he's just like us, and he's a Messiah. He's a Savior. He's come to show us how to be free." And, of course, he sailed on by until he came to the next group, and then they shouted the same thing. And he did bump against the rocks. And he was bumped here and bumped there. But finally, he was out into the open river, away from the shore. Finally, he was heading out into the sea of allness. And as he went out into the sea of allness, he was a free being. Now, you say, he was eaten by the bigger fish? That's not what the story is all about. The story is all about that when we cling, we don't grow and enjoy life. When we let go, we have great adventures. But because we have great adventures, people call us wonderful and marvelous. People call Hillary such a wonderful person because he climbed Mount Everest, remember? Mm-hmm. What a wonderful person, what a great person. So everybody wants to duplicate him. Not everybody, a lot of people. And they want to duplicate him, and they die trying. They get frostbit, they lose their feet, they lose their hands, you know? Isn't that thrilling? My goodness, all just to climb a mountain. And not because of climbing a mountain. Hillary used intelligence when he climbed it, so that he would not lose his hands and feet and so forth. But other people did not stop to learn the lesson. They did not stop to understand. Can I live in the awareness of allness? Allness exists. And in our dream times and in our sleep times, we're often negotiating in our allness. We are thinking about our allness. We're living in the allness. But we have a big difficulty, because when we wake up, all time is now, and you say, how do you sleep and wake up and what have you? But I haven't figured that out yet either. But when we wake up, there we are, remembering perhaps what we had experienced in the experience that we had in the allness. And we come back, and as we come back to remember the allness, what are we doing? What is it that we're experiencing? We haven't the vaguest idea. We think of, what did we experience in the allness? We don't know. We have no idea. Was it good? Was it bad? Was it indifferent? Basically, it was indifferent, you know. It didn't mean a thing. What was it that we were doing there? What sort of a life experience did we have in the allness? Interesting, huh? Mm-hmm. Were we in the same type of body we have here and now? Yes, if that's what you want. Did we have just brains? Were we just a brain living there and doing whatever we did? Yes, if that's what you want. Were we in some other galaxy, some other planetary system? Were we in some other universe? Yes, if that's what you want. Well, Herb, how can you say yes if that's what you want, when it must be one thing or another? Well, who says it must be one thing or another? As wide as our vision is, as imaginative as our mind can be, that's the experience that we have in the allness. Now, to bring us back to the point, allness is here and now. Allness is all right here and now. We have the ability to flash around in our allness, if you want, and be aware of the isness in each area of our allness. But the moment we do that, we cease to be aware of any isness, of any uniqueness as we are here as human beings. So, can I live in the awareness of the allness? Sure. You can do anything you want. You can live in the awareness of the allness. But you don't know an isness if you live in the awareness of the allness. You only know all. And how do you know all? By being all. Well, how could you ever be all? That's an outrageous concept. That's right. It's an outrageous concept. And our little old mind thinking on our is consciousness here, on our is attitude in this level we are, doesn't even want to open up to think of the possibility of what we could be, because it boggles the mind. Now, I would like to suggest to you that among us, there are many who have entered into that awareness and gone back and forth. And they are now in our mental institutions because they were not able to handle it. They were not able to handle this multidimensional awareness. Can you look at a screen, and they sell them, a TV screen, where you can have 5 or 6 different pictures going at the same time? Imagine that. 5 or 6 different shows on one screen, and you just flash between screens, or you can watch them all at once. But you flash between screens, you're flashing between sound. So you go to the ones, here's a fishing story, you go to another, here's a Discovery Channel, you go to another, here's a news channel. They're all showing you, you're seeing them all at the same time, but you don't hear the sound. When you want to listen to the sound, you look over at the fishing channel. Oh, he's just about ready to pull in that bluegill. And so you flash back to that. And it said, and the bluegill got off the hook. And so then you go back to the news. And then the news is very interesting. But then you see the football players, and they're coming in, you know, for a touchdown. And so you flash over to that scene. And bump, da bump, da bump, da bump, da bump. Can you imagine how crazy you'd go? You see, science is allowing us this privilege of utilizing a multi-awareness of our thinking onto many levels, and it is very confusing, very confusing. Can you see why people who use multi-vision television drink a lot of beer and cocktails. That's the only way they can keep themselves what they think stable. But this awareness, we have that possibility. And if I were to just click each one of you, click, 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 and say, okay, now we're all in the awareness, the absolute awareness, the allness awareness, then what would you be aware of? Nothing.
Nothing.
You could, you cannot tune into an idea. You cannot tune into an object, because the moment you tune into it, what are you?
You are it.
You are it, and you are an is. You are a uniqueness. And then the moment you tune into the allness, you have no awareness of the uniqueness. You have no awareness of what anybody's doing, and no care about it either. You're just living on this very beautiful threshold of awareness, but it has no unique awareness. They say, "But Herb, how do you know about it?" Well, you know about it too. You just haven't accepted the fact that you experienced it, and it drove you crazy. Because when you experienced it, it was like bliss. See, bliss does this to you. Bliss will drive you right out of your gourd, because you are so interested in being active. Why did the Buddha come back from his blissful experience? He wanted to live a life of activity. He wanted to teach people and talk to people. Why did Jesus, who had many illuminations, who had many opportunities to just flash out and be gone forever, why did he come back? Why did Jonathan Livingston Seagull, in Richard Bach's book, go into this heavenly state of consciousness and say, "But I care about those back on earth"? Do you think he knew what those people were? And the interesting thing in Richard Bach's book, I find very charming, he had Jonathan come back working with the same people he worked with when he left. Fletcher was there, Maynard was there, all the old crew were there, because all time is now. And I don't think many people are aware of that little anomaly in there. It's a very interesting idea. But the people he knew when he left, and he had left many, many years, because he was out on the far cliffs alone, remember?
A lifetime.
And yet when he went back there, there were his old buddies again, and wanting to learn. And Fletcher was teaching the new ones, remember? Very interesting. And Fletcher wasn't sure of himself. But you see, the book is fiction, but it's a beautiful fiction. It's well-written fiction. It speaks to a lot of really metaphysical thoughts that are very deep and very ponderous, but very illuminating if you don't get hung up on them. And so, can I live in the awareness of allness? Sure. You live in the awareness of allness when you are not aware of any is. And so how can you not be aware of an is? That's a good question. You can live unaware of an is by doing a simple thing, by living in the nothingness. When you live in the nothingness, you know nothing, experience nothing, and yet you're experiencing all.
Yeah,
it's such a unique concept. It's so profound, and yet so simple. But can you allow yourself to be in the black of night and be content? Or do you think there's a snake on the path? Or do you think there's a coyote out there? Or do you think there's something else? You're in trouble. When you can walk through the black of night here, if a flashlight's important, that's okay. But if you walk through the black of night with not one negative thought in your consciousness about who might be out there, you are really in that state of nothingness. And that's wonderful. At least you're pretty close to it. And you imagine walking through a London fog that's so thick you can't see a hand in front of your face, and walking down the street. Can you imagine that?
Yes, I can.
And can you imagine how you have to be aware of every footstep, your footstep, so you know where your feet are going when you come to a street. And there's not much movement of traffic or anything because people can't drive, they can't see anything. And they would just mow everything down like the buildings because they can't see. But that gets you close to a state of nothingness. Now, there are these tanks, water tanks, the sense deprivation tanks. And in those sense deprivation tanks, if you can go in there and allow yourself to remain in there, you can always get out, but you allow yourself to remain in there for a period of time. First, you get over the panic. You get over, nothing, you know, am I going to die in here, you know? And you get over that sense, it doesn't matter. And then when you get past that sense, then you get into the sense of illusions. You see movies and they go passing through you and having all these great experiences. And then you get done with that nonsense. Then you enter into the blackness of the void that you're in. And you open your eyes and you can't see a thing. You know, there's no light, no sight, no sound. Some people like to have music in there with them. But of course that makes the whole thing a mess. But it's like this lady who... what was her name? Your book. She, Initiation. Yeah, Elizabeth Hatch. Yeah, and she went to Egypt and went into a sarcophagus as part of the initiation program that she went through as a priestess. And yeah, sarcophagus is a stone coffin that they put people in when they're dead. Well, they had that as the initiation. So she wore her robe and she got in this stone sarcophagus, very comfortable, you know. And then they roll this piece of stone across on top, which is very heavy, you know. And you're not going to open that yourself. And if you have the least little bit of panic about you, you can really go bazonk, berserk in there. But she passed it, apparently, and she was able to just... I am peace. I am peace. I am peace. I am peace. And then let herself drift into this nothingness, into this allness. And as she had that, then she found that she could do it when she's not in there. She could practice that nothingness when she's not in there. And that's really quite an exciting adventure. However, the things that she liked to write about, the things people like to hear about, a lot of nonsense. And really, a master consciousness going into such an experience does not talk about the mundane qualities of it, like going to the bathroom, you know, screaming, hollering, scratching your fingers on the... You don't talk about those things because you don't experience them. You completely give yourself into it. Now, you argue and get angry with me for working with you on discipline. I say, when I ask you a question, answer it. Now, that's a simple, very simple thing that any normal human being would have courtesy, respect, and integrity of answering a person's question. When that, are you here? And yes. Your answer is yes. Your answer isn't, well, mentally I'm out somewhere else, but, you know, yes. And... have you had your supper?
Yes.
Yes, you know. I didn't finish. I mean, we got to talking here, and so I'm still eating. That's not my question. Did you have your supper? You have it, whether you ate it or not. Doesn't make any difference, you know. But the discipline is answering the questions that are given. And the discipline is like we have for the house discipline, the 13 rules. If you open it, close it, and things like that. And the School of the Master, when we had you here, we taught you to take your little face towel, which was your body towel, which was your everything towel, and you wiped out the sink with it. If you used the sink, you wiped out the sink, you took every drop of water, even from the faucet, that might fall in the sink, because you didn't want that to be in there, because that meant you would have to go do things over again. And you wiped off the silver parts of the sink, the nickel-plated parts, and you made everything beautiful, and then 2 seconds later, somebody else went in and messed it all up, and then they had to clean it up. But You took responsibility for your task, and you felt good about it. You felt very good about it. You felt, how stupid, you know? Why do we wait till the last person is in there and then wipe it up? Why get all of our towels all wet with the water that we pick up and so forth? But no. And then down to Swimex. You swam with just that little towel to dry yourself with. And we got tons of giant towels, whole body towels out there, but we're not using any of them. Not because we want to save money on the washing machine, not because they wear the towels out, not because of anything else, but just to show you, you don't need all these things. You just don't need it. As our young guest was today, I got him some towels, a hand towel and a body towel. And he says, oh, couldn't I have one of those big body towels? And I said, I don't think you really need that. I said, this medium-sized body towel is perfectly good. He says, oh, okay. And I said, and there's a reason for that. Normally, we just give out the little hand towel, and you dry yourself with that, and you wipe your toothbrush, and you wipe the sink and stuff with that. But you're not here under a master training program right now. You're just here for a day visit. So you see, if people really want it, and then I give them a few of the intricate rules, they get all upset because they really aren't ready for the awareness of allness yet. They're ready for the human, the relative level of understanding, and they're not even ready for that. Because I told you all many things, and I said, that's what it is, and you argued with me. What did you argue about today? Do you remember, Ellen?
Yes, about the money finding.
Exactly. I gave you a test, and I said, what would you do if you were walking along all by yourself, nobody else around, nobody knows anything about it, and you're walking on this deserted place, and then there's a $10,000 bill lying on the ground. What would you do? And I didn't give you a clue. And each one of you said, found money, it's okay. This is what our training is. This is what our training. It is not okay. Did it belong to you? Was it yours? Was it yours? It wasn't yours. So you don't pick it up. You don't touch it. Now, if somebody made a boo-boo, a caca there, would you pick that up? You wouldn't. I wouldn't touch it. Well, anything that doesn't belong to you is like caca. You don't touch it. You don't touch it because that's not your privilege. It's only that which belongs to you that you touch. Now, if you have earned it, if you have been given it by another person that it is for you, then it's for you. But if it's just appearing there, it's appearing there as one thing only, a test. And if you argue with me about whether that's right or wrong, then you have missed your test with me. And I think up all these little tests to show you that you are masters when you no longer argue with me. Agree with your adversary quickly. When you no longer want to be right. Because, well, this is what we have always done. This is how it should be done. This is what the world's all about. No. You're not here to do what the world's all about. You're here to find out how you can live eternally, how you can live in a perfect body, how you can have all the things. Right now, every one of us could have our perfect body if we wanted it. But the reason we don't have it and the reason we can't have it is because we do not put the cause in motion. You each say there's something wrong with your body. You each say, I'm too fat, too thin, too short, too tall, whatever you say. And that's in your mind, and you believe it. And so that's what you experience. And now, is this what you want? And then, of course, I give you a good example, too. I give you all the opportunity to say, well, look at you. You know, I'm sure many people looked at the Buddha as he sat there with his big old tummy, and people came up and kissed his tummy, you know, and wanted to be close to him. He said, what a bunch of fools, you know. Do it for yourself. Now, stop judging, stop possessing. What do we got up there? Stop being touched. I told the girl today, I said, now, if your brother had done something terrible, would you go around telling everybody about it? Well, don't talk about my brother. Don't. It was just an illustration, but you see, she's so sensitive. Because of what?
Because probably it's...
Yes, that's exactly, not probably, but fact. I know. I mean, in her family, there are many interesting little secrets, and I was throwing a few of them at the wind. And if she had just said, yes, certainly, I'd defend my brother. I would always defend him, no matter what. I love him. I might not agree with what he did, but I love him. Now, if she said that, then she has reached into the upper level of mastery awareness. But so long as she becomes intensively concerned and sensitive to it, she is right at the bottom of the heap. And she'll stay at the bottom of the heap. And another reason she'll stay at the bottom of the heap is because she wants things for nothing. And everybody in this world wants to give more than they receive. If they don't have money, then no problem. There's always something to do. But you give willingly and joyously of your talent to wash dishes or clean the yard or do whatever. And the things that you're doing do not have to be done. You aren't necessary to do it. It is made just to give you something to do so that you can share, so that you can give of your nature and your talent. You see, being aware of the allness, these relative things are totally unimportant. But being aware of the relative things and being master of yourself, then you can enter into the allness without having nightmares, without going into the sarcophagus, into that black tomb, or the deprivation tank, you know, and not feeling, or walking in the dark of night out here. Now, do you think there's rattlesnakes out now?
No.
Well, then why would you be frightened of them?
No.
Why would you be frightened of them? Do you think that there's any coyotes around here? They're not where you are. See, Sylvia's going like this, Massimino. Not where you are. They're more unaware of you and want to get out of your sight than you are of them. Because you're not looking like they are. They're looking for a rabbit for dinner or something, you know. And you're just out for a pleasant walk of meditation. And if you're deep in meditation, they can walk all around you and you'll be untouched. Just like David in the lion's den. But the moment you're frightened of them, they come running up to you and they'll tear you limb from limb. not really. They don't do that to humans, but they should. Okay, loves. Can I live in the awareness of allness? And the answer is yes. But it's step by step. First, master your human self. And then you can enter into your absolute self. You're already in your absolute self. But you would be very uncomfortable there if you went without preparing yourself. So, prepare yourself. And just remember, all the way, I'm right there with you, not discouraging you, but blessing you and loving you with all that I have that's in me. I love you, I love you, I love you.